product. It's a fantastic draft box. That was what the, I think, audience or the kind of the target was, as a collector's item, and then also really draftable. And because of that, I think it's going to command a premium for a long time. It helps that Guilds of Ravnica has a lot of really good cards in it too. So
cool. Yeah, thanks for sharing that edition, because I really didn't know. And some people ask me about it. Oh, you're not getting it? It's almost like free money. And I think it was late to the game. I just didn't really dive into it. And I wasn't super interested in the Planeswalkers for the most part, except for, like, I think there was like Teferi, and was the other really playable one in there?
Liliana the Last Hope is also in there, which is super popular. There's a few in it though. How do you say it? Is Knight the Knight Errant?
The one that's sometimes pretty modern.
Elspeth. Sorry. Struggling through that one. No worries. That's in it as well. And then Vraska's in it. So it's got some pretty hot names in the Nico Bolas, the original first Planeswalker ever, Nico Bolas Planeswalker, is also in there, which is kind of cool. It's a throwback to the original. It's a fantastic.
Yeah, and that's kind of where, you know, I'm weak on, right? Because I'm a Turner player, and I look at that, I'm just like, well, I don't really need those cards. The only ones I would really want right now are the Liliana and the Teferi. And I would just say, I'll just get those if I need those, you know? So I think going forward, you know, it's definitely something I'll look into a little bit more, you know, when those come out. But as you said, you know, it's going to get probably a little bit harder to make money on those, because, you know, they're going to get more streamlined when they start to release that type of product more. But definitely something I'll look into. I just started the recording too. I forgot to start that at the beginning of the session. So sorry about that, but now we're recording. So
no worries.
Yeah, thanks again for talking about that tick edition, Chris.
While we wait for questions, do you want to jump over and talk a little bit about the standard standard's pretty stale, it seems like, the meta? From what I've read, it's just all Golgari, but modern
seems I'll like talk a little bit about that evolving. Standard seems a little bit stagnant right now. As you mentioned, Golgari is winning a lot of the tournaments. However, I think there's a couple of decks that are kind of preying on Golgari now, and one of them is the red blue deck with Arclight Phoenix, and it's like a bunch of spells. It has like chart the course, and then I forgot what other. Let me look it up real quick. There's an article on Channel 5 about it. I think Mengucci talked about it recently. Let's see. Give me one second here. And this deck is starting to, here we go. Blue-Red Phoenix. I'm going to copy and paste it into the thing here. So this deck is starting to gain a little more steam. I would watch out for this deck, and then what will happen to the meta if this deck starts to pop up a little bit more. I'm not really sure if there's too much in terms of, like, MTG Finance here, because Arclight Phoenix has already spiked because of Modern. Maybe Chart the Course might be a card, but I think that's kind of high already in terms of, like, it sometimes seems a little bit play in Legacy and maybe a little bit in Modern. Banefire has already spiked. Disdainful Stroke is a card that I pointed out maybe two or three articles ago. There's an FNM promo that's pretty cheap, and this card sees play in Modern sideboards, like Spirits and some other decks. So this is a card that might be something to keep an eye on. There's also Opt in this list. There's FNM promo of Opt that's still, I think, relatively low, that sees play in a lot of decks as a in terms of Standard, it seems like this deck is trying to take over the Golgari decks. But it has, I think Mengucci mentioned in his article, it has a weak time against a specific deck, but I can't remember what it was off the top of my head.
One more card that shows up there that's been just kind of showing up in a lot of chatter. I don't know that it's actionable, but I'll tell you, as a casual player, it appeals to me is Niv-Mizzet Perrin. That's a card that I've read on numerous occasions how good it is. Essentially, I remember one thing standing out is that Niv-Mizzet in standard, if it stays on the board for a turn, you know, basically if you untap with it, you win, is what I've heard. So not in every case, certainly. I'm sure there's matchups where that's not true, but I did read that in one case that it, so, and as a casual player, I can tell you that that's a card that will certainly find its way into EDH decks. I'm actually partial to dragons. I love dragons. I started playing a lot in Invasion and Plane Shift and stuff. So Invasion had the, you know, some of the legendary dragons, Derrigas, and those.
Go ahead. I didn't mean to.
Oh no, I was just gonna say it's a card that I would keep an eye on. I don't think it's actionable by any means, but it's definitely a card long term that I could see that card maybe making a wave at some point, you know, just kind of as a sneaky pick. So
yeah, it's funny that I mentioned the casual aspect card, because I have a friend that I went to coding boot camp with. He played Magic a while ago, just really casually, and then as he started work coding at a company, he has some coworkers that play, and so he started playing the game again, and he knows I'm really big into Magic, so he started talking to me about it, and he's building a blue red spells deck, and I think he has this card in here. So you know, it's definitely a card that people are looking at, I think, for EDH. So maybe foils could be something to keep an eye on there with that card going forward.
Card Kingdom actually already has only one stock near mint at $11. So
yeah, so the supply seems low there, at least at Card Kingdom.
Miramoto asked about commons in standard, and whether they're low right now. I actually have only one comment really that I can say off the bat. I posted a few days ago. I want to say I might have posted in General Finance. Goblin Crater Maker. Mm-hmm. It's a bulk level uncommon. I think I picked up roughly 40 copies at just over 10 cents. I think it was like an average of 11.5 cents per copy. So maybe $4.20 or whatever, 40 cents. That's a card that I could see making for bulk level uncommons, to answer your question. I don't know if all of them are, but certainly that one looked appealing to me. I've done very well with uncommons in MTG Finance across the board, you know, going back 5 years. In fact, I would say maybe uncommons have been some of my most lucrative specs. And so in my opinion, that card itself is certainly very low, both in foil and the non-foil. I don't know that it's, the foil version is probably at an okay price. I think it's around $4. But the non-foil at 10 cents to 20 cents feels great to me. So
yeah, I think that's a really great pick.
Yeah, multi-format player.
Yeah, I think that's a really great pick that you have there, especially the non-foils, Chris, because as you said, they're like 10 cents. And if you go to MTG Stocks and look at it and some of the lists that they have there, it even sees play as a multiple, like way back and even into like Legacy. So, you know, this could pop up and start popping up more in Modern even. It's just a very versatile card, and it's relatively easy to cast. And it sees play. The key thing is it sees play in multiples, because I mean it's not legendary or anything, so you can just jam like two or three of these or whatever. You just start, you know, attacking with it and then blow it up later when you need. So to mention the foil side of things, I actually bought a set for myself, and I let me go back to my spreadsheet really quick here, and I have it at Crater Maker. I got them at $2.99 a piece, and I only got four of them. So I think that was like basically my ceiling to get the foils.
Yeah, that feels like a good price, though. I think I got a set of foils at $3.99, so you've got me by a full dollar there.
Yeah, and $3.99 still seems okay. I think maybe like five is like absolute tops. And I don't think really it would go any much lower than five over time, unless they like reprint it. But I mean, it's such a versatile card, and I think you're spot on with the non-foils, you know, at 10 cents. I mean, you could probably even find these for cheaper, maybe somewhere else, or just even trade for them. You know, people are just, or just like in draft chafe or whatever, pick these up. And this could easily be like $1 uncommon or $2 uncommon once it rotates, or just even as it gets more popular.
So one other uncommon that feels underpriced, Miramoto, I think broadly speaking, I don't know if I can necessarily answer your question whether the uncommons and standard as a whole are low. It does feel, because I'm just looking at, I've got a sort right now on best-selling uncommons on TCG Player. And the first two that come up feel okay price-wise. You've got Lava Coil at trending around like between 50 and 80 cents. That seems good to me, like price-wise. I don't see there being a whole lot of opportunity on a card like that. Creeping Chill, though, actually looks, we were talking about that kind of before the cast got rolling, and the 8-0s that showed up at in the first half of SCG Dallas. I think both decks that were running Creeping Trill, or both Dredge decks, I should say, ended up in the top 8. And I'm seeing copies of that for like 29 cents. There's 5 available on TCG Player at 29 cents. There's a handful at like only one copy each listed at 10 cents. But at a quarter, you know, if you can get there, in fact, there's one person who's got them listed for, or one vendor, I should say, for 25 cents. There's 23 copies. They're lightly played according to this, but that's another card that looks good to me. It's another card that's already making waves in another format, meaning that, you know, long-term, obviously it would have to dodge reprints and things like that. But even just within 12 months, if that sticks as a, like a tier two deck in Modern, that could easily be a dollar or two uncommon. So,
Yeah, I'm looking at the most played cards for standard right now on MTG stocks. And I'm looking at the uncommons here. And another one that I had mentioned, Disdainful Stroke, it's actually on this list. So that's just another a data point to show you that potential of that card. Another one that kind of sticks out a little bit, I think I also talked about in one of my previous articles, is Cast Down. I probably wouldn't go for the non-foil versions, but the one I pointed out is there's an FNM promo. I think if you can get this one relatively cheaply, it might be an okay one to go after. I think if you can get them for like
that's $1. Dominaria, yeah. Right? Yeah, that was a good card. That's a very good card.
Yeah, it sees play in like I think Grixis decks, sometimes in like the Golgari X decks, maybe run like one or two of them. So and the reason why I'm still not like super high is because you don't really see like more than one or two in the 75. But again, I think if you can get this like card, if you can get this card pretty cheap from like a store, like online or whatever, or pay for it, I think it's an okay one to get.
So I'm going to ask a question back to the group that's in here, Miramoto and everyone else that's following along here. Do you think it's kind of I guess I'll play devil's advocate here. Do you think that mythics are overvalued in standard right now? I'll give my sentiment before I, you know, ask what everyone else thinks. I'd love to hear what people's opinions are. But the reason I'm asking the question first is because with uncommons being so low, you have to wonder where the expected value is going, right? What's soaking that value up from each set? And in my, you know, I just looked at guilds and Dominaria, and there are quite a few mythics in those two sets alone. I haven't even looked at M19 or Ixalan, but the mythics look very expensive to me. Doom Whisper in guilds is now, granted, this is MTG stock, so I think this is, you know, a little bit higher than you could probably find TCG low. But it says $24.99 for Doom Whisper. And then you've got 4 more mythics that are all between $12 and $15. And then it doesn't drop off that far because then you've got several that are between $5 and $9. 6 more mythics. Again, probably TCG low. You could probably find a couple of these lower than 5. But it just feels on a quick glance that mythics look particularly expensive, and that's kind of an interesting thing to think about here.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because a lot of people tend to focus on the mythics and the rares when sets first come out, right? They're looking for these like really powerful cards, and or they're looking for, you know, the hidden cards within the rares and the mythics. It's a lot harder with mythics because there's only a handful, maybe like 10 or less, right, in every set. But then, you know, like you said, a lot of the more hidden value is in some of these uncommons. Like, for example, you know, a Goblin Kratom Breaker that you bring. So maybe that's kind of like untapped potential.
Yeah, it might be something to look at. You know, one more point here with Dominaria. Like I said, I've only looked at guilds and Dominaria so far, but Dominaria only really has 4 what I'm going to call truly playable mythics right now in Standard. But a couple of these have cross-format playability as well, so it's driving prices. Obviously, Teferi and Karn as well. So Teferi is still trending between $45 and $50. But then you have 3 more mythics, Karn, History of Benalia, and Lyra, who are all over 20. And so it's you put those 4 together, and you're talking about, you know, over $100 just if you were to have one of each of those cards. That feels like a lot to me, and it makes me think that to your point, that uncommons and even probably rares maybe have some room to grow as these sets eventually go out of print, especially the good ones.
Yeah. Okay. So Mirmorodo, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but said he's been out of standard since about Battle for Zendikar. It seems crazy that mythics are so high when I was so used to uncommons at like 3 to 5, and now are most under $1. So I think that's really a good point. You know, when looking at these uncommons, you know, maybe they're getting cheaper and cheaper. So that may be true, it may not be true. But again, I think when looking at these uncommons, to me, it seems like one important aspect is to see whether or not it's played in decks in multiples, right? Like as a 4 of. So I would target those commons first, right? Not like the cast downs, because it's only like one index. But like the Goblin Kratom Breaker showing up as like a 3 or 4 of, like chart the course as like a 4 of, right? In a spells deck. So if you can find those uncommons at like a dollar or so, those are probably like really good ones.
I'm gonna add one thought to that. I, because of my kind of quote unquote casual focus, what I tend to do with MTG Finance is I look at cards and I say, would I play it first? Right? Like that always crosses my head and crosses my mind when I'm looking at any card for the first time, or even looking at it again. I shouldn't say the first time. Basically, every time I look at it, if I'm thinking about buying it or just evaluating it, first question is whether I would play it. And if the answer is yes, where would I play it? And I tend to start thinking about it first in the casual mindset and try to put myself in, you know, I don't watch a lot of stream or like pros play, you know, once in a while I'll watch pro tours and things like that. But I do try to put myself in like an evaluator's mindset, like thinking of the pros and cons. And uncommons have a weird way of often being defining, in the sense that there are, you know, even just in standard right now, you've got a card like Field of Rune, which I remember when I saw that for the first time, I had a partial, I guess, thing to Eldrazi. I thought Eldrazi were super cool for a while there. And I immediately saw Field of Rune. I'm like, well, that's going to go in some format of a Eldrazi deck, most likely. It matches what they want to do, disrupt their opponent. It's got colorless, tap for a colorless. As soon as I saw that card, I went out and I think it was still in pre-orders, and I picked up several at like 50 cents, several play sets at 50 cents, and did really well on those. And I also picked up foils. And I think the point I'm trying to get at with these uncommons is, if you look at one and you think, using like Goblin Crater Maker as an example, I looked at them like 10 cents. Wait, this thing on MTG Stocks is showing up in every format right now, and it's only been out for 3 weeks, 4 weeks maybe. How is that possible? So if you see cards like that, I think those are immediately actionable, that if you know, if it has data to support that it's being played, especially across formats, right? It's one thing if it's in standard, but if it's seeing modern, legacy, et cetera, that's immediately a sign that it's bulk uncommon. Long-term, it's got a home already. Mm-hmm. And then the second thought is, think of it, you know, if you are a casual player, think of it whether you would play it, right? Like if you bought, I don't know, two play sets of foil Unclaimed Territory as an example, which I did. That's this is a real example. I bought those back when they first were when they first got spoiled in Ixalan. It's an uncommon that taps for a colorless, but you can also choose a creature type and spend. It's basically like Ancient Ziggurat. It can give you one mana of any color for a creature type. So I was like, oh my gosh, that's perfect for like dragon decks that are five color. I'm gonna buy some foils of that, and if they don't hit, I still can use them. And if they do hit, great, then I'll sell them and make a profit. So,
Yeah, I think that's a great thing. You know, are you first using it? Because that's kind of like how I look at cards. You know, whether or not I want to buy them. You know, because I don't want to have to pay like a super high price, but I eventually need them for like tournaments. So I say, oh, am I going to use this? Is it possible? Yes, I'll pick them up. But something to point out, you know, I'm often looking at like foils now, and I kind of get blinded by looking at the non-foils, like Goblin Creditor, for example. I didn't even think to just pick up like, you know, 3, 4, 12, 10 play sets of non-foils and just stick in a box and then wait till they go up to like 50 cents or a dollar and just, you know, quadruple, you know, 5x, whatever x times my money on that. Just, you know, it's not a lot, but you're still making a profit on it. So it's a
good reminder. It's a great point.
That's a good reminder for me just to make sure, you know, looking at foil versions of cards to also look at the non-foils. And it's...
I have 40 copies at figure 11, I'll call it 12 cents, 40 copies. That'd be $4.80 I spent, which is basically one less coffee or, you know, one less beer at the bar or something like that. And here I am, and I've got, you know, 40 copies of a card that I might be able to buy less for $1 later on, turn it into $40. I've had some very lucrative uncommon specs before. I think the best was actually one that one of the insiders here about 3 years ago mentioned how good Goblin Lore, how good the card just looked. It was so, the person said how unique the card was. It was Chaz actually. And he said, yeah, Goblin Lore looks really unique and it's only from a couple older sets. So I actually went out and just on a whim, I had no basis except his mention of it and bought like just tons of play sets of it. I was picking up everywhere I could in bulk, just 10 cent, you know, 10 cents out of bulk bins at my LGS here in Chicago. And I picked up foils and those things ended up being about $15 a pop when I sold them. I was selling play sets for anywhere from $50 to $70 at one point when they were really hot
they went up to 30 at 30 at one point.
It did. Yeah. Yeah. I think I had a few peak around 25 to 27 per copy. So it's possible that you can really extend your wallet with a good uncommon spec.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that'll happen. Granted, that's not a good example because supply is a lot different nowadays, but still.
Yeah. So I definitely think that was a good, you know, question or discussion that was sparked by Mimorodo. And then also Bradless had another comment after regarding Mythics and the kind of the sense that we were talking about. You know, so he says, I haven't been paying a ton of attention to Standard, but the decks are literally jammed with Mythics, which is pretty funny and true. When you need 3 or 4 per deck and there's high demand, 15 to 25, I'm guessing $15 to $25 each isn't so crazy. You know, and again, it just shows you, right? You got to look hard and say, is this being played in multiples? And you know, it's kind of almost like common sense, you know, but sometimes you just forget, right? You get kind of zoned in, you're like, this card is cool, you know, but then it's only played as a one of, right? And, you know, like a card, for example, is Chromium the Mutable. That's a mythic, right? But you're only going to play like one or two of them in your deck. So you're never going to play, I don't think you would ever play 4 of them. You know, I picked up a couple for myself, just, you know, foil versions in case I want to play them in like Standard. Or if you take a look at MTG Stocks, I noticed that they're playing a little bit outside of Standard. So I just got those pretty cheaply. I think I spent like $10 on each of them. And I think that's, you know, that's pretty much the...
It's a target for me. Yeah. It's a target for me right now. I want one for EDH.
Yeah, and I think actually, maybe 8 is the floor. Maybe 7 is the floor. So it can't really go much lower. I can only think. It's probably one of the best dragons out of the set of them in core set 2019.
I play Scion of the Ur-Dragon in EDH, which one of the strategies with Scion of the Ur-Dragon is just being able to pull out powerful dragons that can help you keep the Scion of Ur-Dragon on the board, right? And the ability that Chromium the Mutable is built in with is, you know, it's got that discard a card, it becomes 1/1 with Hexproof, and that is like, for Scion of the Ur-Dragon players in EDH, I can all but guarantee Chromium would be a virtual auto include, just because that ability allows you for the entire turn that you've turned Scion into Chromium to keep it protected, right? And the kicker is you can discard another dragon into your graveyard and then next turn go and try to reanimate those. So it's got a lot of synergy for EDH purposes for both dragon players and then also just players who are playing like the Bant colors. I think it's Bant, if I'm not mistaken.
It's Esper.
It's Esper. Okay. So anyone that's playing in the Esper colors, though, that's also a great, you know, a great probably finisher and potential include. So
yeah. So I think, you know, kind of circle back to what Bradless was saying, you know, that was a little bit of a tangent, but it's also, I think, a point to make there is kind of what you were saying about, you know, when you're looking at uncommons and stuff, right? You got to think about like, what is the actual application of it, right? And then, you know, that's going to kind of warrant, like, how many copies you would probably play, right? Are you going to play one or are you going to play four? Now, if it's 3 to 4, then maybe you want to spend a little bit more on this card, whether it's a mythic or an uncommon, whether it's foil or non-foil for that uncommon. You know? And then you could say, okay, maybe I should buy more play sets of these. Whereas, you know, you look at a card like Chromium, that doesn't mean you can't make money on it, or you know, you don't want to like spend $10 on it, and later on it'll spike to 20, and you say, man, I should have just spent $10 on it because I need one. You know, it's good to always look at that and say like, okay, Chromium, you know, you probably don't want to play two of these. So if it's pretty cheap, just get like a couple, and you can just throw it in a box. You won't lose your $10. It'll probably go up to like 15 or 20 if you don't ever use it. You can sell it for like 15 or 20 or whatever if it goes up to 25, 30 and still make, you know, $5-$10 on it. Yeah. Papu MTG says Chromium is not going anywhere. So I'm guessing Papu's, yeah, it's played as at most.
I agree.
It's in one deck. Okay. So I'm not.
I agree. I think its foil price is propped up heavily by EDH already. I don't know that I would say that it's not an actionable card right now.
Yeah.
I'm actually patiently trying to acquire just one copy for personal use, and I have no desire to pay. I think Card Kingdom had them around like $13. I think you can get them on TCG around 11. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's funny that you're talking about Chromium because I was watching Kid Icarus auctions today on eBay, but those are for four foils, and they had Chromium, and it ended up only selling for $33 plus the $3 shipping. So you figure that's like if you don't combine shipping, you're talking about $9 per copy. I think it has room to fall for sure. So. It is, Papu, you mentioned perspective of standard. It is seeing a tiny bit of experimental play as a one of also in modern as a finisher, I saw. So
Yeah. If you go to Chromium on MTG stocks. Let's see. Beautiful. It's usually in like some blue white shell in modern. I was looking into it not too long.
I've just read that there's been some talk of it being a one, you know, one of as a finisher in modern, but modern control.
Yeah, Jeremy Dazzani, he came in 16th at I think GP Prague. Yeah, he played two in his list.
Oh, wow.
two in the sideboard. Yeah,
that feels like one more than he should have to me.
maybe.
But, yeah. I was going to shift gears a little bit, kind of along these lines though. So I wrote, my article went live earlier this morning, and, one of the things I talked about in it was having patience with the market right now, the MTG finance market. Actually, I say the market, you could probably talk, if you're into investing with stocks, you have to have patience there too. Mm-hmm. But I think this kind of highlights what I was trying to make the point of in that article, which is cards right now in general either feel still really inflated from the huge bull market run that happened from like basically late 2017 all the way into the summer of this year. I feel like quite a few cards are still coming down from that, and things are cooling off in with that. So I think a lot of people are tied up with their capital, both on the vendor side as well as maybe even the player and speculator side, just because of the prices, right? It costs a lot more to pick up cards in the latter part of 2018 than it did in the former part. And so if you didn't have what you needed to play going into this year, you probably spent a little bit more capital than you were anticipating. My hypothesis is that some of these cards actually have, you know, room to fall. And Chromium isn't that one I think is propped up a little bit just because of Standard plus a little bit of EDH, but in general, cards outside of Standard and Modern, I feel like especially, they're going to take a little time before they hit a floor and then start moving back up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's always good to, look at things outside of Standard and Modern, which is, you know, a good reason why you're here to kind of complement the side I'm coming from, you know, which is the tournament side, and you're kind of the more casual side, Chris. So it's really good to have that perspective. As BioSpark 88 just mentioned in the thread as well, he says, I'm not even as about EDH as some of us, but I do a lot of my dealings there. So, you know, it is really important to look at all these different formats, you know, and groups that play Magic, you know, and circling all the way back to the GP aspect again, you know, you go to GP Milwaukee. That's why it's always good to talk to as many people as possible, just because you get a new perspective or just more information about something maybe you're not as knowledgeable on.
Yeah. I think EDH is just a great, it gives cards as a whole just a great floor. You know, mm-hmm. as long as, I think maybe the point I would make on EDH card or speculating with EDH in mind is just making sure that when you're buying a card, that if you're speccing on a card that's not seeing play in like Standard, Modern, not so much Legacy or Vintage. I don't think those drive prices quite as much. It'll drive some foil prices certainly, but if you're making a spec just on playability in, let's say, Modern, having the evaluation of whether that card could also see some play in EDH, I think really helps because it kind of gives that confidence of a higher floor. And I'll give an example of like the opposite of that. I made a quick flip on a spec of Vexing Devil. It was actually kind of riskier move that I made just a few weeks ago. I bought a handful of them in foil for $15 off of TCG. I think it was Card Kingdom. And I basically flipped those right into a playset on eBay for $100, which ended up selling. And I think I got lucky because it was one of those hype situations in Modern, and Vexing Devil really has no, to be honest with you, it doesn't really have a lot of casual appeal at all. It's kind of just a card that I think a casual player might look at and be like, how the heck am I supposed to use this thing? But it showed up because of Pelt Collector. It had a little bit of a synergy with Pelt Collector and that zoo list. And so I did a very risky thing there, and I didn't evaluate EDH in that at all. I was just kind of going off the basis that, oh, it's hot and Modern. Prices are, the foil price was like a 1.1 multiplier from the non-foil. I was like, oh, maybe this will be a quick flip. And I was able to make a couple bucks off of it, but I added some risk to my portfolio that was unnecessary, as opposed to, you know, a card like Teferi, for example, the Planeswalker. Even with that being in Standard, you know, that's going to come down a little bit once Standard rotates, but that card just has so much playability in the Eternal formats, and it's such a famous name in the MTG lore as well. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and to kind of go from the other, what you're saying, usually when I look at my thinking about buying a card just because I might want to use it, you know, I'll often, you know, go to, I think it's edhrec.com, yep. just to see like how many decks that card is played in. And that kind of sometimes, you know, sways me, in the direction of actually buying a card, because I could sell it to EDH players for, you know, a tournament.
There was a discussion in the general finance flow about EDH rec and whether it was a meaningful tool for EDH and being able to understand the demand. There's a
sorry about that, brother. My baby crying in the background. Sorry about that, guys.
Yeah, exactly. No kidding.
Thanks, Fred.
That's funny.
All right.
There's a little mute button.
Yeah. Hold on 1 second. Oh boy, I don't know where the mute button is here.
Down left of left of your.
I got you.
Comment. There you go. So I'm just going to give one more thought on EDH rec before we wrap up. There was a discussion in general finance. I want to say this was 2 weeks ago about the validity of EDH rec and the using those numbers as writers, using those numbers to support EDH specking. And I actually, it really got me thinking quite a bit about EDH rec and what it proposes to the table or brings to the table. It was a great question. I cannot for the life of me remember which insider brought it up, and I wish I could, but it was a great question by that person because it started kind of challenging my thought process. I've used EDH rec probably for, I'm going to say, almost 2 years now since I found out about it. And I've had a lot of success using that as a tool to kind of measure popularity. I think the thing that I've seen it be most successful for me personally is when you see like a new card get spoiled, that's a legend that's got commander appeal, being able to look at that card immediately and kind of seeing what some of the data that EDH rec is collecting from players, what kind of cards are starting to draw appeal or interest from those new commanders. So I wrote an article in August about Yuriko, the hottest card that was a part of Commander 2018. And when I wrote that article, I did a lot of research using the EDH rec tool to figure out what people were putting in that deck, kind of helping think of how I would brew the deck and then seeing what other people were doing. And it led to a couple of cards that I really didn't even think about. One of those was Sunken Hope, which is a nemesis enchantment that I think the foils, or, I'm sorry, not nemesis, plane shift. And I think those foils actually recently just popped. So I don't know if the new price is sticking or not, but they were plane shift in 10th edition. And it was just the type of thing that I wouldn't have even thought of that. But those spiked, I think, almost entirely because of EDH players playing Yuriko needing that card. So anyhow, I think we're past 9 central. Did you want to wrap it up?
Yeah. You know, I want to say thanks to everybody that joined this time in the channel. We have Brad Liss, our friend Papu, and Miramo Roto. You know, thanks for all the questions that you guys asked and a lot of the, you know, comments that you posted in the thread to start the discussion. And I also want to say, you know, thanks to Chris Martin for his insight. I wish you the best of luck at GP Milwaukee. Hope you have a lot of fun and, you know, make some good trades or buying and selling there.
Thanks, Edward. Yeah, thanks for having me, and it was a blast.
Yep. I think Efren and Brad List are also typing in, so they might have one little thing to say here. Just wait a second, see. Cool. Yeah.
Thank you, Brad List. I owe you an Excel. I'll see if I can figure that out and try to get you an Excel doc and put that into the flow for everyone to see.
Cool. Yeah. And we'll do our best to try to get the audio together and post that up. I'll probably have to work with Sig on that. I'm sorry for everybody. The first half, I forgot to bring in the bot to record, but we got the second half. So we'll definitely work on that and let you guys know when it goes up.
Yep. Cool.
Cool. See you guys.
Thanks, everybody.
See you guys next time. Thanks. Bye.